please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 474. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined today by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
Music to my ears. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we always do at koop.org. Stay right in your seats.
Step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Croon, croon till you hurt.
It is Wednesday, July 18th, 2018. On the show today, we have City Theater and their show, Playhouse Creatures. And later, we're going to talk to the Vortex Youth Summer Theater and their show, She Kills Monsters. And of course, we'll have a lively discussion of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Boise, Idaho. Stick around. I don't know if there actually is theater in Boise, Idaho.
One.
I'm sure there is.
One singular theater in Boise, Idaho. <Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da>. So, well, first of all, I am thrilled. We have the whole team back together again.
It's
Nick
been
Squared
a while.
Is here.
It's exciting.
It has been absolutely too long.
I agree.
Nick Mayo, what's up? You and I have not shared a microphone in a while.
We haven't. It's exciting to be back. I missed you guys like crazy. Crazy.
Well, you've been busy Summer Stock Austin. We'll do a little teaser. You guys are going to be on the show next week.
Yeah.
So tell folks what shows that Summer Stock Austin is doing this summer.
We're doing, this summer is the summer the con is on. We're doing Dirty Rotten Scoundrels,
Dirty
The Music
Rotten
Man,
Scoundrels.
And an original piece by Alan Robertson called Robin. But we'll talk all about it next week.
Well, you know, the
when
one
the
thing.
When the con is on.
You got trouble.
Right here.
So.
That was
hysterical.
A nice
and Nicole Shiro, you are fresh from Cousin Vinny's wedding.
I did. I went to my Cousin Vinny's wedding. I went to Gloucester. Boston. I ate some Wahlburgers. I went to Salem, Massachusetts.
Where'd you park the car?
I saw in Harvard Yard. I saw where Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote The Scarlet Letter and got filled up my entire. This is the best part, Lisa. Not only did I meet a Houston Texan, the tight end, my favorite
Texan.
Team, Ryan Griffin, woo! I also filled my entire New England section of my National Park passport book with passport stamps, and I don't know what I'm going to do.
That's
I had to get a new book.
That's
I had
amazing.
To get a new book. It was very exciting.
You're so busy.
Well, this is a very coincidental because today, this very day, I deleted my National Parks app from my phone.
Well,
so
that's
did our
sad.
Government.
I go to national parks. I love them.
I know you do. I know you do. Well, let's introduce the folks that are here sitting with us. We have Amani Wilkins. Hi, Amani.
Hey.
We have Kit Burton.
Hey.
Hey, that was a great... We have Teresa Cruz.
Hello.
We have Chris Skinner.
Hello.
You got to get right up onto that microphone.
Hello.
And then Lindsay McKenna.
Hello.
Yeah, you don't want the youth to outdo you with the microphone. They're they're not even
that.
They're sitting, so they can't even we're gingerly gonna... walk up to the microphone or adeptly or whatever word I'm trying to come up with. So that that song I just played, which was called "Croon Spoon," is from The Cradle Will Rock, which just released their first original cast recording from way back in 1937. So we've talked about The Cradle Will Rock before. Has anybody ever heard of this show, The Cradle Will Rock?
Yeah.
Not. Do you know anything about it?
No. I've heard of it. I know the name. I know
well,
the name.
Well, it was produced definitely. By the, hold on, I was going to say the Federal Theater Project back in the 30s.
Yes.
It was a federally funded show that was about to open up, and they closed it for reasons, but it was assumed that it was because it had themes about unionizing and liberal things. So they pulled the funding and said it couldn't open. Actors Equity Association agreed and didn't agree. They said if the producers aren't going to fund it, then they can't pay the actors. Therefore, the actors can't perform in it on stage. And that word is a very important thing as it ended up happening. So what they did was they moved it to a different theater. Because the theater was also owned by, and I'm trying to, was also owned by the WPA, I think the Works Project Administration, who actually shut it down. Moved it down 60 blocks to a different, moved it up to a different, bigger theater. The composer, the players wouldn't play, the musicians wouldn't play. The composer played a piano. The actor, the original idea was the composer was just going to play the whole thing from a piano. Full house, and they even gained more people because they offered free tickets as they walked up the 60 blocks to the new.
You're like, you come on in!
Come on in! And so they ended up, the way it ended was the piano by the composer, and the actors sat in the house and performed.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing?
It's awesome. One of those moments.
Yeah, and there's never been a recording of it, and they just released it, and that was one of the songs from it.
I like that you did that. I wonder what made you think of that.
Well, actually, that's a really good segue because there's a little
that
bit...
That wasn't leading at all.
There's a little bit of controversy in the air with regards to our government.
Thank you for the sounds.
Oh. And our wonderful...
what are you talking about? There's never controversy over here.
No, there isn't.
Yeah, what?
That's crazy. So there is an award given by the President of the United States called the National Arts Medal. And it's given out every year to exemplary
artsy
artists.
People?
Artists people. President Trump is the longest, has taken the longest. He has not presented a medal for this yet at all. And it's not unusual. There's a lot of, it's unusual in that it's longer than anybody else has taken, but it's not unusual for it to take a little while. But the last awards were given out in 2016 by President Obama, and I believe it was in September or October, right before the election. And he hasn't given it out yet. And the question is, because, you know, he targeted in his first budget, the NEA. I guess I should say, before we go any further, that the opinions expressed here on the show are not the opinions of the staff, the board of directors, or co-op, but simply the opinions of people here on the radio. But he does not have an affinity for the arts. He's not shown what's the word I'm trying to support?
Support. My grandmother and I were just talking about it. He's one of the, she goes, I have to tell you, she's 94 and how many presidents she's seen. She said, this is one of the first presidents that even when they were a citizen, I never saw them at the theater. And every other president I saw at the theater. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
Well, so as you know, he tried to dump the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, off the budget completely. Fortunately, that got voted out. And they're still there, but it's everything's on the bubble. So if he's not, they did call to find out, and they said, well, we're still putting together a list of people to do it. Other people that have wanted is somebody named, I hope I get this pronunciation correctly, Steven Spielberg.
Yes,
Spielberg. That's Spielberg. He went far.
Who is going to, anyway, Anna Deavere Smith, who I've been seeing a lot on The West Wing as I rewatch it.
Oh, what a joy that you're watching that. I love
know,
that.
I do love
that.
Well, let me tell you, her Dr. Acolytis is kind
Dr. Acolytis
of everything.
Is excellent. So let me ask the youth here in the group about how do you guys feel about the idea of government funding for the arts and either happening or not happening. Y'all have any opinions along those lines? They're looking at each other.
I was like, they all have opinions. I think they're all like trying to be like,
it's radio. I have to do play by play.
Well, I think that the government should should fund, you know, the art side of everything. I feel like that would really bring a lot of inspiration to a lot of youth actors like me and actresses. And yeah, it should be a thing.
Have you ever received scholarships or assistance? For instance, when I was growing up, we had the National Foundation for Advancement in the Arts, the NFAA, which is now part of larger organization that I received great cuts. But I remember as a young artist receiving financial assistance to go off and study my craft. Have you ever applied for any of those?
Not yet.
You should apply for them while they still exist.
I will do that.
Time is running out.
I will do that.
But wait, if you apply now, you will get two applications.
It's like from Popeil, but wait, there's more. The way you said that, though, and then flip the mic around was a drop the mic moment that the listeners did not see.
Well, I clearly, in this room, I can see we all see the need for government support of the arts, and indeed it does. Especially with youth and things like that, it does make America great again.
It does. It really does.
So speaking of making America great again,
you Fiddler, know why it's great? Because Nick and I are here with you today.
Yeah. There was an opening this week, not on Broadway, but off Broadway, really off Broadway. The Yiddish Theater Volkspiel production of Fiddler on the Roof, which is all in Yiddish. And it has gotten some incredible reviews. It was directed by Joel Gray. And the only other recognizable name for me that was in it was, the woman that played Jackie Hoffman's
in it. You've got a lot of Broadway talent in that. You've got Bruce Sabbath from the revival of Sondheim's Company. I'm really interested in this production.
Well, here's the interesting thing, too, which I find interesting. 3/4 of the actors do not speak Yiddish. Uh-huh. And specifically were going for actors who could act versus actors who could speak Yiddish. The script came in 3 languages. It was in the Yiddish. This is a translation from a production that was done in Israel. Yiddish. A transliteration. So the first was a transliteration, which is literally spelled out how it's pronounced. The other was the Yiddish, and then the third was the English production. And they rehearsed it in English first, and then they switched over to Yiddish, and they had some people that were helping them. But
He did some talkbacks a few nights and read from history books about the story of Anatevka, and I read a few articles of people who attended and were like, I thought the show was so powerful, and then to have Joel Gray reading from these books and transcriptions, I've just read so many amazing things, and I'm like, who doesn't love Joel Gray? I met him.
So
I love him. He's my height.
In Yiddish, in Yiddish, it is a Fiddler auf dem Dach. They have things like, instead of if I were a rich man, it's if I were a Rothschild. And so in tradition is Tradizei.
Wow, that's I'm super fascinated by this.
Well, the good news is you're going to get a chance to see it because it's already extended.
Yeah.
So that's a good news. I think it's playing through September or something.
I was just in the city for 48 hours, and there's a lot of attention about it. And you know, usually when you're walking around the city, you don't see a lot of advertisements for off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway. They've got some prime real estate in terms of the billboards and the recognition that they're getting. So that makes me happy.
It's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. And the Volksbühne is a Yiddish theater company. And they've not been able to do this because they have not had a home. They now have a home where they are, which is actually in a museum. And I'm going to give you it's in the Museum of Jewish Heritage in Battery Place downtown. There is not only the review that was written by Jesse Green, and I have to tell you, Nick, I'm glad you're here because I got a little bit more endearing to Jesse Green.
You
because
did.
I believe we are the same age because he talks about going to Fiddler in 1966 or seeing the road show in Philadelphia in 1966.
It's been super cool.
He's younger than that.
It's been super cool to watch you and you're warming up toward Jesse Green.
Warming up to him, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
And he loved this.
I was about to say, he loves that she loves. Yeah. She's warming up to him. He let me know. He's like, man, I'm so excited. Lisa's liking me.
So it's totally something that I would love to go see. It does have super titles, and I find this interesting. They have super titles in English and another language. Anybody want to take a guess what the other language is, the super titles?
Hebrew.
Nope, that would be a good guess. I don't get why, but it's Russian.
Huh, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, why does it make sense?
Yeah, because the Russian Hasidic population.
Hasidic population, yeah, that does make
huge
sense.
Huge Russian Hasidic.
Isn't Fiddler on the Roof supposed to be a Russian play?
Yes, it does, but the super titles are for people, assuming that you have a large audience that needs to to see it. I just didn't think that there was that many
Russian people. In New York, yeah. That's crazy. But that makes sense, and it's still, I am with you, it's jarring to my brain.
I think the Russians are hacking the Tonys.
Hey, hey, Lisa, on that note, I say, Kenahara.
Kenahara. Darn tootin'. I know, I'll try to make it so you guys can hear this, but this is a hint to our next subject.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide.
All right, so what do you think?
I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
Why do you think I played that?
Because it's coming to the stage.
It is. I don't know how I feel about this.
No, love the show. Don't need to see it on the stage.
No, and truthfully, let's chat about something real quick.
Yeah.
It was a cute TV show, but it wasn't even a very good TV show.
No,
tuned in to see what Zsa Zsa Gabor was wearing,
exactly.
But it was not even a very good TV show.
Most TV shows, have you watched The A-Team recently? Because I realized how bad that was, too. The shows we grew up thinking were great, they're not so great.
Some of us never thought The A-Team was great.
I did.
We watched
Mr. T.
Although we watched every single episode.
Yes, not good.
But, yeah, so it's going to be done by the theater producers Pam Laudenslager and Colleen Loeber.
Wow,
interesting last
name. There you go. They're Laudenslager and Loeber? Because that's
it's like Bialystok and Bloom.
It's a little Bialystok.
The lottery of names.
So I just found that Nick is there shaking his head no. Mm-hmm. And I have to.
I mean, and I love me some Green Acres, but no, thank you on the stage.
I have to, yeah. So the play that goes wrong announced it's closing.
Yes.
And now it's announced it's not closing.
Yes, isn't that funny?
Yeah, so.
It went wrong and then it went bad.
Right into the microphone.
It went wrong and then it came back.
Yeah, well, that's what in my notes I say. The play that went wrong goes on.
Dun, 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 dun.
So they were going to close August 26th, but now they're going to continue and play through January 6th of
the
year.
That's not a small adjustment.
No, that's a big adjustment.
That's a big adjustment.
But that makes a lot of sense, because why would they shut down before the Christmas season? It makes
no sense. The play will go on, but maybe the ad agency won't.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the play, the play that goes wrong is coming here.
I was about to say, and it's on this season's Broadway, on the 18-19 Broadway season, which is kind of exciting. So, we get the first group of tours. You never say we always get the first group. We do with this one.
Yep. So, speaking of that, there was a lot of things that we're not talking about, but things that are going on tour, announcing tours, and I'm totally blanking on the names, but I went and looked at the cities, and these are all the first runs. Oh, God, what were they? Anyway, but Austin isn't on
you
it. San Antonio isn't on
it. You wanted to find out where SpongeBob was going?
Houston isn't on it. But Dallas is one of the main stops for all of these, which I find interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so this is... Did anybody read the article by Melissa Errico in the New York Times?
What was it on?
Anybody?
Is it on her production that she's doing with John Doyle and the Finnegan's... What's it? What?
No, it's... On a clear day, you can see.
That's
whatever.
What I meant. Something Irish.
On a clear day, you can see Finian's rainbow.
I knew it was something about the weather.
Yeah. It's an Erin Go Bra. On a clear day, you can Erin Go Bra. At the Irish Repertory Theater, speaking of that, it's tangentially about that, but it's about misogyny and all these musicals that are out there. And I read this article, and she's talking about her. She did the tour of... My Fair Lady. She also was doing. Has anybody seen On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever?
I saw the Harry Connick one.
Okay. Well, so it tells the story of somebody who gets hypnotized, mm-hmm. and the hypnotist falls in love with this person's past life and.
What?
Yeah,
it's twisty.
It's a twisty. Beautiful music in it. It is a. Twisty odd little piece. Yeah. Yes.
There's lots of scatting, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of
pass. Never seen it, but they also talk about Kiss Me, Kate. And here I'll show for the studio audience the the poster of Kiss Me Kate shows the part where she's bending, you know, she's laying down to get spanked over his ear. It is, yeah, so not cute, so misogynistic. And it was interesting, even after reading this article, I'm...
That's like one of four versions of the Kiss Me Kate, and each one they kept redoing. I know, but I'm saying that same film, and they kept redoing them because people were offended, and they were just as offensive. The next one was even just as offensive. It's interesting.
But so Melissa Errico had to find, as playing these roles, she had to find reasons within herself to play the roles and to do it. And she talks about her process through all that, which even after as I read it, and she also talks about Camelot and playing Guinevere, who has to deal with, she's looked down upon because she's an adulteress. It's interesting to read the article. I would encourage other people to read it and get their own opinion. It sounded like to me that she was really stretching to find a reason to play these roles.
Yeah.
I think that that's probably accurate. I want to say bravo to the New York Times to engaging artists in topics about other things than their art, because like Melissa Errico's had a career forever. And to talk to a woman who's in a transition point in her career, going from the last bit of ingenues that she can
play.
She's
now a 40-year-old ingenue.
Yeah, you know, a 40-plus-year-old. So that's, I think, bravo to the New York Times for engaging that person in that dialogue. Whatever she says is agree with or not, I think it's a cool thing that they're doing that.
I love how Nick can always find... water to fill the glass halfway full instead of halfway empty.
Because I'm parched.
He jazz hands through life, Lisa.
So here's an interesting thing. While we're talking about issues that are kind of iffy, did you read this article? It's a pretty small article. It's about Theater Palooza, which is a children's summer musical thing. MTI is suing them because since 2015. So for 3 years, they've been doing a whole bunch of musicals and have paid zero rights for them.
Well, why did they wait for 3 years to go after them?
I don't know. But
it is a mystery, huh?
So, but shame on them for doing that. And they've done everything and rights for musicals, even for schools and kids. It's a couple of thousand dollars. Which adds up as someone who has to pay those things. But still, I find that amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Wow.
Where is this camp?
They actually run three camps, one in Ashburn, Virginia, Leesburg, Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. So in the Virginia...
I think that's... You mentioned that, Lisa. It's not your favorite thing to do to pay for rights for something, but it's something that we... It's what we do.
Mm-hmm. It's what we do, and it's important as people that are artists in this industry and any industry to support that and pay for the stuff you use, because people are... their livelihood depends upon it. Anyway, so there's a very cute picture of a production of Matilda with kids.
Aww.
But those kids all look like little thieves.
Principal
so,
was right.
They're revolting children, and that just made my day.
Opening tonight, first preview tonight, is the musical version of Dave. And I don't know how you guys feel about it. I'm excited about this one.
I don't know Dave, so I don't know what
it's
to...
It's one of those... anybody watch
is
Dave?
Is that the president?
Yeah, with Kevin Kline and Sigourney Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Langella, Broadway actor.
I don't know why we need to keep make another movie a musical. I love the movie. The movie's cute and charming.
Well, here's some... I've got some really bad news for you, Nicole Shiro.
They say it's good.
No, here's the bad news.
What?
Well, that's not bad news. That would be good news. It's going to keep happening.
Oh,
no
I
matter
know that.
What you feel
no,
about
I
it.
No, I know that. Andy Carl took a wrong turn. He's doing Pretty Women. What can I do? He doesn't want to listen
but,
to me.
But Dave is one of those movies that if it's on, I watch it. I just
Yeah, it's
love
a good
it.
One.
I want to see it now. I like that cast.
It's just charming. It. It's charming.
Yeah, it's charming. Anyway, I'm all for it. So the couple other things that I want to talk about. We talked about this, that School of Rock is closing.
Or as the headline said, schools closed. No, what did they say?
Oh,
my God, I forgot. It was such
a
great
York
and
Times,
I laughed so hard
the New
the
York
title.
Times had a very clever one. It says, School of Rock announces closing date.
No, they. Someone had a funny play on words and it made me giggle. But I don't remember anymore. I was saying it to you before the show.
A show, by the way, based on a movie.
On a movie.
Yep. So it had, when it closes, it will have had 1,300 regular performances and 31 previews. They question why it's closing because their box office is pretty good. They're doing about $1 million a week. But they're closing. That's it. All right.
Well, I didn't get to see it, and I just worry about that composer. Maybe if he lost any money, he doesn't know if he's going to make it.
Andrew Lloyd Webber is living on the edge.
Listen, it's a great musical. The Stick It to the Man, the kids play their stuff. You cannot have a good time. It is. It is a movie that worked well in the musical. I love kids jamming. They jam. Yeah. They rock the house.
And my reaction was somewhat less excited about it.
But yeah, no, it was pretty good.
So I guess you have to really like kids to like it. And the other thing that I find interesting is that West Side Story is coming back to Broadway again. we have some West Side Story fans here. They just revived it not all that long ago, but it's going to come in December 2009, directed by Ivo Van Hove, who's done a zillion things, but never a musical. Mm-hmm. And it is a Scott Rudin production, so you know it's going to have some interesting things going on. They don't have anything other than that as set as an opening date of December 10th, 2019. So mark your calendars.
He's one of my favorite directors. He's so talented.
He is a force that to be reckoned with, as they say. So we're going to take a break. Just because we need to hear a little bit more of the School of Rock that asked the permanent question, where did the rock go? We have returned. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. And Nick to the first power right now.
Nick Squared to first power. No.
I don't know. I know you probably don't listen to the show when you're not here.
I do.
But when I was here by myself, I did my interpretation.
it's always my favorite.
Of Nick Squared. It was quite fun. So we've been having a great time talking to Lindsay McKenna, Chris Skinner, Teresa Cruz, Amani Wilkins, and Kit Burton. And now we're going to switch gears and concentrate specifically on Lindsay and Chris and their show that's at the City Theater, which is entitled, hold on, don't tell me, The Playhouse Creatures by April DeAngelis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lindsay, you are the director of this.
Yes.
Tell us about this show. It sounds fascinating.
It's a very neat show. I first encountered it in college where we actually put it on uh-huh. Southwestern University, about 30 miles north, and loved.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to remind people, not the one in San Marcos, the one above. And it had just some amazing female roles in it. Stories that you don't often see on stage. And when they said they were going to do it City, I was like, well, no one can direct it but me. So let's do it.
you busted in. This is your second show to direct
third,
it or more? Third show.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, great. You get a lovely little write-up on the website.
Yeah, I saw that today. Yeah,
that Andy likes you. and Chris, you were the stage manager.
Stage manager, yes.
Yay, we love it when managers are on.
Yeah.
Because we love to talk about stage management and what it requires. So, but before we get into the meat of our discussion with you, we have to take a little tangent. And we're going to do our midday legal ID, which we just choose at random. Or we actually let the computer choose it at random. So let's see what it is today. That was the wrong button. Here it is.
Let me put my gun down. This is D.D. Snavely.
This is Patrick Page.
This is Jason Williams, and you're listening.
You're listening to Offstage and On the Air.
I'm letting you know you're listening to Offstage and On the Air.
On KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
91.7 FM, and it beats the out of Andy Williams.
That's completely, that's a ridiculous accent. That's not how I really sound.
You could do it again.
That was fun. That was a mashup.
I was quoting D.D. Snavely this morning, so that's kind of there hilarious you that you have that on there.
We love our Jason Williams.
We love the Patrick Page,
and we love the Patrick Page as well. So, well, good. You're in terrific company. You're in Broadway company. Both Broadway performers, I should say, and writers. Mm-hmm. So you did not choose this play for City Theater. They chose it, and you just lapped
it
up.
Well, we had suggested it. I think there were multiple women that suggested it for the season list for several years running. And so this year being the season of the director, it was like, well, hey, you want to do this one, right? And I was like, all right, then. Let's do it.
Well, it's interesting. This takes place in the 17th century.
Correct, yes.
You keep talking about women in this theater. Give me the connection.
So we start off, I think the first official year in the play that's mentioned is 1663. This is 3 years after.
I remember that
King
year.
great year, guys. It was in 1660, King Charles was restored, the second was restored to the monarchy by the parliament because they were tired of living under Puritan rule. Living under religious zealots turns out to be not so much fun.
Not fun.
Oh, weird.
We can experience
so
that.
Weird. So when he was reinstated to the monarchy, he loves the theater and he brought it back and gave patents out to two companies, the Dukes and the Kings. The Kings headed up by Thomas Killigrew, who was credited with bringing women onto the stage. So all these roles previously played by men or young boys were now given to women. And that's where our story begins in this play.
So it tells the story of the first female performer.
Yes, there's Nell Gwynn. The historical character Nell Gwynn is in the show.
The sister to Fred Gwynn.
Yes. also Elizabeth Barry, who's less commonly known than her, but was a great tragedian of the time.
Tragedian?
I can't say that word. And there's a few other references. Afra Behn is mentioned kind of just in passing in a scene. Right. So there's these historical figures mixed in with some purely... fantasy figures as well to kind of make our show happen.
Is it a 100% female cast?
No, we actually are doing one of the two versions of the show. One version is all female with five total, and then this version has six women and two additional gentlemen that April wrote in the second version.
So, yeah, two token men.
Mm-hmm, yes, yes.
So how many people all together in the cast?
It's eight.
You're going to have to add six plus two.
Yeah, I went to art school.
Yeah, I got my degree in not math.
What's it like to work with eight actors?
It's great. This is my smallest cast so far.
Tell us a little bit about the actors who you're working with. Are there any people we know and love in the Austin area?
Of course there are.
Some of them are actually newly returned to stage. Valencia Lee, who plays Mrs. Betterton, this is her first time on stage since I think it was college, wow. She said.
That's exciting.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
She's absolutely fantastic. When she came into auditions, I was like, I noticed a break on your resume. I felt like an employer. I was like, I noticed you've been away from the theater for a while. Could you please tell me why? And it was just time for her to come back on stage, and she is just breathtakingly wonderful in the role that she's playing, which is sort of the wife of the theater owner.
Uh-huh.
Dash Lee is playing Nell Gwynn. She's fantastic, been doing film. Hannah Enright, who's involved with Zach Theater and has been on City Theater stage before, is also on, along with Darren Scharf, who also does work at City frequently. There are some familiar faces, at least for City. And then the rest of the folks are just amazing.
They've Lori Cordova.
Lori Cordova.
Jesslyn
just
Parks.
A dream. Jesslyn also does a lot of work at City. Mm-hmm. She's actually moving away. This is her last show in Austin.
So many people are moving.
I know. She's heading up to Colorado for greener and colder pastures.
I call it Colorado. Well, I love some of the quotes that are here. The playwright April DeAngelis has quoted, this was on the City Theater website, "When women break their silence in an act of reclaiming power, the gesture grows beyond the individual woman to touch the big issues of our world." And it's such a powerful, wonderful message to be giving now, especially.
Yes.
Very topical.
There's definitely some instances in the play, not to give away too much of the plot, where you see what happens when women aren't allowed full agency of themselves and their destinies.
And we have no idea what that's
what?
Like. And Chris, tell us about your experience as stage manager. First of all, we always, whenever we have a stage manager on, we like to start out by saying, what does a stage manager do? And then relate that to your experience with this particular show.
Stage manager is sort of like cat herding. It's a great opportunity to work with a cast and a director in a way to help them organize their thoughts artistically. And it's the great communicator, the person who communicates what the desire is for the play, for the actors, for the director, and then to also communicate that back to the artistic director and make sure everyone's in full communication with
each
other.
You're the hub of the wheel.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'm like the internet. And that might not be good.
You're a series of twos. So how has it been stage managing in particular? Is there anything from a stage managerial standpoint that makes this particular production stand out for
you? No, it's a dream. I think this is probably the easiest cast I've ever worked with. And this is the first time I've worked in Austin, but just a dream to work with. The actors were completely off book and ready to go.
Yeah, they
and
were had, awesome.
They were
what very crazy game. When you're like,
they're like, they're ready to go, completely committed, very cordial cast.
What does off book mean?
Off book, having all their lines memorized.
Ah, okay. Clearly, I don't have that.
You're what we call script in hand.
I don't subscribe. Well, that's
or
great.
That lady.
So the show has opened. How's it been doing?
It's been very well. We've had some more intimate audiences for the first weekend.
Typical.
But I'm hoping word of mouth really, really takes off for them. Everyone in that cast deserves to have full houses.
Can I bring my kids to this?
No, I would not recommend children under the age of 13.
Okay, this is PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So it's playing now through August 5th?
Correct.
And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
They can go to the City Theater website.
City Theater?
CityTheaterAustin.org.
Yes.
Well, great. Well, thank you guys for staying here with us, and hopefully maybe you'll stick around and join us backstage because we have a lot of fun there.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, that was Lindsay McKenna and Chris Skinner of City Theater's Playhouse Creatures by April DeAngelis. It's playing at the City Theater through August 5th. For more information, you may visit citytheateraustin.org. And this is from a show called The Two Svengalis.
Do I seem glad we met? And have I appeared to forget?
Meet the greatest actress in the world. The greatest.
The greatest plug-in actress.
The two Svengalis. I love that. So, okay, well, let's do a very quick local section so we can get to our final guest. I want to talk about Hill Country Community Theater, which is in Cottonwood Shores. Anybody know where Cottonwood Shores is?
It sounds lovely.
Yeah, well, it's kind of near Marble Falls, as I had to look it up on a map. But they have a lovely theater, which I've never been to. I'm just going to say it's lovely. But it's a 147-seat house that was an old boat dealership.
Okay, you're intriguing me more and more.
I know.
Keep talking.
I know. They do four shows a year. And right now they're doing State Fair, which is another one I've never seen. It's a Rodgers and Hammerstein show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and so you can get information at www. Look at it on Now Play in Austin, because you'll find it there.
I love that the idea of doing theater in an old boat.
I know. It's kind of like doing theater in an old
airplane hangar or something.
Well, or a grocery supply loading dock.
What do you know about that?
Nothing at all. Okay. Y'all have anything that locally you want to... I saved all the Pollyanna and Heisenberg. We didn't talk much about Heisenberg.
I was just going to say Heisenberg's closing, but your website that you were just talking about for State Fair is thehcct.org.
Right, but make sure that you put www in front of it, because if you don't, you get some Arabic thing.
Okay.
If you click the link, it'll go to an Arabic station.
But so www.thehcct.org will give you information. information on State Fair. Yeah, Heisenberg is closing this weekend with Lizzie Beckham and Harvey Guillon. On Sunday is playing at the Clayburgh Theater at ZACTheater.org for more information. It's written by Simon Stevens, who wrote Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Just on Broadway 2 years ago.
Yep, with one Mary Louise Parker.
MLP.
Yes, and
who's on Broadway now?
Lizzie Beckham is, man, she's just a little gem, and she and Harvey together. It's a beautiful little nice 80-minute piece.
A BLN.
Yep.
Beautiful little nice.
There you go. Right. And it closes this weekend. So
today in theater history.
Today
in theater
history.
Today in theater history.
What?
there's a lot of stuff that I did not know here, so I'm going to just let people enjoy this for themselves. 1928. Variety prints an article focusing on the amount of legit theater that's being sought for the new medium of the talkie film, and they did talkies that's in air insane. Quotes. Mm-hmm. And just to keep this thing going, the Yiddish theater star Muni Weisenfeld changes his name to Paul Muni.
Because he's a Bubbermeister.
He's a Bubbermeister, and that's I guess we're just celebrating that.
I love it.
All right, well, I'll celebrate
there
it.
You go. We're just going to skip all the way to 2002. Hairspray played its first preview today. Oh my God, I love that reaction. yeah, Hairspray, first preview.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. And then.
Oh, yes, because 2002 is the first. Never mind.
All right, you done?
Yep.
All right, good. This is the anniversary of the death of Henry Hughes. He was 89 years old. He was a theater critic at the Saturday Review, and he championed regional theaters, which is, he's the Nick Mayo of his time. And he also founded the American Theater Critics Association. He died in 2006. 10 years later on this date, the show Privacy opened off Broadway at the Public.
You mean Privacy?
Actually, it was Privacy.
It I know, I was being a smarty pants.
Somebody named Daniel Radcliffe. And that was it was written by James Graham and Josie Rourke. Privacy. It is the birthday of Clifford Odets.
Oh.
Lupe Valdez.
Yay.
Not Lupe Valdez.
No, this is a good birthday day.
Hume Cronin.
Oh.
Red Skelton.
Yes. Day.
Hold on, I gotta turn. There's a lot of birthdays.
You know why they're fellow cancers.
Elizabeth
like
McGovern,
me.
Speaking of Downton Abbey. Craig Bierko.
Yeah.
And Kristen Bell. Speaking of Kristen Bell, does anybody watch the TV series The Good Place? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My friend really likes it, but I haven't gotten to it. It's just, I love that show so much.
I did not like it, but then I did, and I binged it. And but Kristen Bell does such a wonderful
but
job.
But it's not just She's Kristen fantastic. Bell on the show. Ted Danson is kind of
such a beautiful
in that
silver
show.
Fox.
Yeah.
Oh,
love me some Ted Danson. Mm-hmm. You know, he and I went to a bar together, and everybody knew my name.
Hey, Lisa, I know that we've already passed this section, but I want to say it out loud
because
it's important for me. No, it's not local, it's not anything, but it's art. And if you have Netflix, please watch Hannah Gadsby Nanette. Lisa,
is that the comedian?
Yes.
Yes, I've heard so many things about this.
I'm looking at you with great severity in my eyes. Okay. And I would encourage anyone who's interested in it to look on Netflix and put in Hannah Nanette. Gadsby Nanette.
Yeah. It's going up. When you go into Netflix, it oftentimes shows up at that top bar. Yeah, I've heard a lot of very interesting things about it. I don't have a lot of info.
There's a level of truth and theatricality within her performance that I think theater enthusiasts would like and humans who are interested in the human condition. So it's beautiful.
One would hope that would be roughly...
Everyone.
Yeah.
Well, expectations.
I said one would hope. So here is... I did not mean to choose this particular rendition of it because... I wasn't crazy about it, but from Hairspray Live, Jennifer Hudson, who I was very happy to hear. We'll be right back. We have returned from a station identification.
Well, you know what? That I've For always 10 years, wanted I just to keep... say that, and what? Yeah, and I've been on air with you all these years too, and
everybody does. Everybody that does these shows says we are back, but I'm trying to like change
station
it up.
Station identification was it? Yes, it was.
Well,
not so
if the people of certain ages don't know station identification.
Oh, I remember
that
the station
happen.
Identification.
Well, so once again, this is Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared.
We've been having lovely conversations. We just had a lovely conversation with Lindsay McKenna and Chris Skinner talking about City Theater's Playhouse Creatures. And now we're going to switch to the youth of America that are working over at Vortex Rep, who we just love. And this is the Vortex program. Oh, God, what's it called?
Summer Youth Theater.
Yes. And I guess we have a couple of summer youths and their director. The director is Teresa Cruz.
It's Utes.
Utes.
If you watch My Cousin Utes. Vinny.
I do watch My Cousin. That's another one. Along with Dave, when My Cousin Vinny is on, I watch it.
Do you know when I said I was going to My Cousin Vinny's wedding, someone asked me if it was a new musical previewing in Boston, and I went, no. It's really My Cousin Vinny's wedding.
Well, okay. Yeah, so, Teresa Cruz, you are the director.
Yes,
hi.
That's me. Hi.
And then we have two of the performers, Amani Wilkins.
Hello.
And Kit Burton.
Hey.
So, Amani and Kit, why don't you tell us what this show is?
This show is a heartfelt play about a sister's relationship, even after death, through D&D.
Define.
Oh, I know what that means.
Dungeons and Dragons.
It's the most. It's this is my favorite. I've done this Summer Youth Theater program 3 years now.
Yep.
This is my third year, and this is the favorite one I've done so far.
Oh my, that's quite an endorsement.
The cast is just they're all so loving, and
thank you.
And the director is also amazing.
Thank
you.
She's
just so. And it's just like I've had the most fun. Producing or not producing, but like creating the show with my peers, and it's awesome. It's been the best.
Both of your faces totally lit up when you were introduced, and then when Lisa asked the question, both your face they've been lit up the whole time. So that's kind of exciting.
For those people, you did say it, but for those people that don't know what D&D is, what is D&D?
It is a game called Dungeons and Dragons.
And did either of you play it prior to doing the show?
I have played it before, and actually, the person I played it with was not a very good DM. But
which that means Dragon Master.
Dungeon Master.
That's what I meant.
Yes, yes. The Dungeon Master or the DM is the
District Manager.
Yeah. Exactly.
Dragon Manager.
Director of Marketing.
But they tell the story, and they're a really my character Chuck is the DM of of the show.
And I'm guessing you're a good dungeon master.
I'd like to think that I am. Okay. I'm not gonna toot my own horn, but I do think that I play the character of Chuck pretty well. And it's a dungeon master. A good dungeon master is so important for the enjoyment of the game, because if you don't have a good dungeon master, then you don't have a good game, because the dungeon master is supposed to be the storyteller and you're playing the story. So I tried really hard.
I love that people still play Dungeons and Dragons. We played it all in the 80s. It was everything. So this just made me very excited too.
Amani, what role do you play?
I'm the lead role. I'm Agnes.
Agnes. And so do you also have a game role?
Kind of.
A D&D game role? No.
It's kind of hard to. It's like I don't know how to explain this.
She has she has a slow start into it, so she just plays Agnes.
Okay, you just play Agnes.
The way that the play is, you switch in between D&D and IRL, and I have it written in like this in my script, but basically you just in the beginning it's a very clear division between the two.
Between the two,
It's a separation. Mm-hmm. But near the end, it's you can't really tell anymore which world is which. And
well, you guys are prepared to do a little scene, aren't you?
Yes, we're.
Yeah. Do somebody want to set that scene up for us?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay.
So this is the first scene of the play. It happens after the prologue, which just gives the breach of Agnes and Tilly, who are two sisters. Tilly is little sister, and she dies in a car accident, and that happens before the play starts.
Right.
So we have that little storytelling, and then we open up in scene one in the game shop where Chuck works, and Agnes comes in. This is I think, a year after her sister has died.
Yeah.
And okay. So she enters the game shop looking for Chuck.
All right. So this is Imani Wilkins and Kit Burton doing a scene from the Vortex production, She Kills Monsters.
Soy un pretendo. I'm a loser, baby. So why don't you kill me?
Excuse me.
Wow, what in the Hades?
Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you.
I wasn't scared. I'm a black belt in Jedi Jitsu.
I'm looking for Chuck Biggs.
Well, you're looking at him, but my homies just call me DM Biggs because, you know, I'm big where it counts.
Oh.
As in my brain. Not because I'm fat. Seriously, it really has nothing to do with body mass index. I actually work out.
Right? I get it. I get it.
So what can I do for you, sweet thing?
One, don't call me sweet thing. Two, someone told me you might know a thing or two about Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, that depends on if we're talking first or second edition. Oh. Psych! It doesn't matter which edition, because my D&D IQ is +3 hella high.
You're very odd.
Odd isn't hot,
no.
Right? So, what can I tell you about the D and the D?
Well, I have this thingy. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Well, let me check it out.
Be careful with it. It's not mine. You know, you're not exactly what I was expecting.
What? Were you expecting some nerd? Because I'm no nerd. I got a girlfriend from New York.
How did you meet a girl from New York?
Kind of little thing I like to call the internet. You've been on the internet, right?
Yeah, like once at school.
It's the bomb, yo. I got it hooked up at my house, top of the line. I'm talking 56 kilobits per second. If you ever want to come over and
I'm
check.
Cool. So, about the notebook.
Well, it's clearly a homespun module.
Clearly. What's that?
It's like a map for a D&D game. An adventure. And this one looks like it's written for 1 to 2 players at entry-level skills with power designations to, Yo, where did you get this?
It was my sister's.
This is your sister's?
Yeah, it was in her locker.
Your sister is Tilius the Paladin?
Who?
Tilly Evans?
You knew her?
Of course I knew her. Every player in Athens has been on a campaign with the great Tilius.
So you can help me figure out what it means then.
Figure it out? What exactly do you want to do with this?
Well, Chuck, it's a game, right? I want to play it. Scene.
Oh my God, how fun was that?
I am so intrigued.
I wish we had a video of Ken. I just called you Ken, of Nick's face. Yeah. So what,
and he's in a spinny chair. So.
What fun you have. So, yes. Teresa, tell us about your approach as director and tell us about some of the other youths that are in it, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. This play, I think, is particularly special for the summer youth program at the Vortex because we're doing this young adventurers edition yep. of She Kills Monsters. And it's really great because these youth performers, these young performers, get to take on these roles that are so... that are similar to them in what they're experiencing in high school, like with cheerleaders and, you know, and it takes place in 1995 as
we
well.
Figured that,
yeah, with the internet
when we
line.
We were in 56K. Yeah. Even I got that.
Yeah. And what's been really special for me in throughout this process has been the passion and the fire and mm-hmm. All the ideas that the ensemble, we have 11 actors in the show. Only a couple of them are double cast, but with the D&D world, we have real life and D&D characters for all. And they just approached, I was so grateful for their energy and their excitement for this piece. And so really steering all their ideas and forming that and making them feel like the center of the stage and having all their moments with the monsters and the mayhem, I think has been the most important part of the show.
And Teresa, did you have any knowledge of Dungeons and Dragons prior to directing this?
So I played Dungeons and Dragons before I started rehearsals, and it was...
was like,
as research or
yes,
you had just done
as research, uh-huh. as research and fun. I got friends and family together to do it. So it was uh-huh. really fun. And it was awesome because I had never really done it before. And I know pop culture references, but not the actual game.
Right.
And I did have a really great DM. So I was happy about that. and it was nice because I was sitting there and it took me a second to like figure out how I was participating in it. But as soon as it happened, I was like, oh my goodness, this is just collaborative storytelling. Like, this is awesome. And then it was so exciting to do a play about this with such awesome people with so much energy.
Well, they clearly are. And we are totally out of time. When does this play at the Vortex?
We open Friday.
July 20th.
July 20th. And we run this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Awesome. And where can folks go to get more information?
www.vortexrep.org.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming
on
the show.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you.
Hope you can hang out and go backstage with us because we'd like to learn a little bit more about you.
Oh,
yeah. Awesome. Well, great. That was Teresa Cruz, Amani Wilkins, and Kit Burton of Vortex Rep. She kills monsters at the Vortex from July 20th to the 28th. More information, vortexrep.org. And we'll be right back after we fight the dragons. We have returned. You've been listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
And we have done it again. We've done another hour of this show. Our next job is to trundle our little behinds backstage.
We got to go backstage!
We got to go backstage!
Hey, Lisa, you're not going to be here next week, are
no,
you?
No, I'm going to be in Milwaukee.
What do you talk?
Vern and Shirley?
As a matter of fact, the song we're going to listen to when we leave is called Timeshare in Wisconsin.
Is it a song you wrote from experience?
It is.
It was fun to be together. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, it was good for all three of us to be together. But Nick Squared will be doing the show on their own next week, and y'all will have a great time, I'm sure.
We'll miss you.
So remember, you can get us, they don't call it iTunes anymore. It's now called Apple Podcast.
Oh, Lord.
Apple Podcasts. That's
I'm
where you can find
I'm going to be the lady
us.
40 years from now still calling it iTunes.
I do too.
So good
iTunes.
Luck with that one.
but you can also get us on our website, offstageonair.com. What do they do when they're there?
Oh, they just put their little name in the box to the right, click enter, and guess what? Each week, we just get delivered to your mailbox.
Pop right into the
Voila!
Mailbox. And one of the good things about getting the podcast is you get to hear backstage at Offstage. So we're going to spend some time talking to these folks that we've been talking to, and we're going to learn a lot about them, and I can't wait because there seems to be so much to learn.
I agree.
Yep. So if you're listening to us on the terrestrial radio, you can listen to Austin Monitor News Next. If you're listening to us on the podcast, and you may as well just listen to both, Backstage at Offstage is next. So let's just talk about our timeshare in Wisconsin, shall we?
Let's do it.
Bye, yes. Folks.
My dreams are your dreams.
Sueños son sueños.
And your dreams are grand.
Mis sueños son gran.
I'll stand behind you, baby.
The curtain has come down on Energy, the musical, the story of six young orphans looking for a whole bunch of plutonium in a 56K world. Not knowing what that means, we're just going to go backstage.
Did they find it in the plutonium stolen from that truck in Texas?
They did. They did. They found it.
It's the missing plutonium.
So here we are backstage. The show has just come down. We have gone backstage. We're down next to the theater, outside next to the dumpsters.
it's extremely hot today.
It is. It's quite warm. Fortunately, it's not the super duper heat of the day, but it's definitely the heat of the day. And joining us here from the show, Amani Wilkins. Hi, Amani.
Hey.
Kit Burton.
Hey.
Chris Skinner.
Hello.
And we have Teresa Cruz.
What up?
So here's where we get to learn a little bit more about you, and I just want to go right to the youth, don't you? We're going right to the youth.
Every time you kept saying the youth earlier, and all I have in my head is hair and Youth of America on
LSD. LSD. So I saw hair in 1969. And they changed the lyrics to that.
They
because,
did, I know.
Because Nixon was the president at the time. Mm. And the lyrics went, R-M-N took the I-R-T. And then what did he, when he got there, what did he see? Spiro T. Agnew on LSD.
LSD. Yep. And then it went to the youth of America with LBJ.
That was, yeah. Well, it didn't go to. That's
oh,
where it started.
Oh, it went backwards. Yeah.
Well, great.
Reverse, sorry.
So Imani and Kit, do you have any idea what we're talking about?
No.
Okay. The musical Hair.
Have you ever seen or heard Hair?
I've seen Hairspray.
Okay, not quite the
not
same thing.
The same thing. Same thing.
I've heard about it, but no, I have not.
Yeah, it's a very interesting show. It was the Hamilton of its day.
Really Ooh. Was. Yeah. I'd say it kind of almost still is in a way.
So raise your hand if you've seen Hamilton. You've seen Hamilton?
I've seen like...
No, if you have you been to a theater and seen Hamilton?
No, I haven't
been.
You?
Yeah. Okay, you and me.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo! Did you see it in New York?
Yeah, I saw it at the Public, and I also saw it on Broadway, too. Yeah.
You saw it at the Public as well?
I feel very, I feel like
you are in a very, very, very enclosed small, sorority.
I know. It was because I was really late to the game seeing him perform at the White House on YouTube, and I saw it like a month before tickets went on sale to the Public, so at the Public.
Right, because right after that, you couldn't get tickets to even the Public.
I mean, it's sold.
So you saw, obviously, the original cast downtown. Then you also saw, sorry, we were talking about you, now we're not. so then you saw the original cast oh, I am so jealous. So here's what, so I just saw it in Chicago a few weeks ago, and the cast was the weakest part.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I still, still an amazing show. But I was, I really would have loved to have seen specifically Leslie Odom Jr.
Totally.
Daveed Diggs.
Yes.
And Philippa Sue.
Yeah.
I think I could... Lin-Manuel Miranda, yes or no, but
totally.
So tell me about their performances.
Man, it just like really felt so special because knowing that they originated these roles that are so rich and so much like who they are as people living in this day and age.
Yeah.
That was just, and like the raps for Jefferson are like all to Daveed Diggs's amazing talents. And it was just, it felt so special. And even with Lin-Manuel, I got to see him in both performances.
Yep.
And, you know, you hear that his understudy like almost had a more affecting performance. But just like so much of that show is about history and like telling it and like where we're at now and all those things. So it just really felt like being in the room where it happened. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just being a part of it.
Well, very few people have seen the off-Broadway. So were you living in New York at the time?
I was not. I was going to school, and I went to college in Connecticut.
Okay.
And Eastern Connecticut, and my brother went in Western Connecticut, so we just hopped over to New York on the Metro.
Were you at Yale?
My brother was at Yale.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's Eastern.
Yeah. Western.
Sort of middle.
Middle, I guess.
Kind of middle.
West of me, I was in New London, Connecticut, at Connecticut College.
Awesome.
I was like, you were at Connecticut College.
I was at Connecticut College.
My stepbrother's the head of the physics department at Yale.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So where did...
He is the nutty professor.
Yeah.
So where did you grow up?
I was born in Ottawa, Canada, but I grew up here in Round Rock, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're Canadian.
I am Canadian.
So one of the stories that we did not talk about, there was a big... I'm sorry, you were going to say something, Kit?
Oh, I was just saying that's why Teresa is so nice.
Thank you, Kit.
I am a Canadian fellow, but one of the stories that we didn't talk about is there's a big hullabaloo. We've talked a lot about cultural appropriation and things like that, and last week we talked about Yellowface, but there's a big Canadian, and I don't have the details in front of me, but there's a big Canadian thing talking about the Indigenous peoples of Canada, and no Canadians were in it.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I think it might have been in Ottawa. I think it was in
been.
Ottawa,
yeah.
actually.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
And it was like, hello, Canada.
I know. It's crazy.
So you did your growing up in Round Rock.
I did. I grew up here. And I say Austin when I'm in Connecticut and people ask me where I was raised. I say Austin because I went to school all over the place throughout all the years. So
all over the place in Round Rock?
All over the place. Like I went to... school at Montessori School of Lake Travis when I was younger, and then I went to MSLT, if you will, and then I went to St. Michael's over in Westlake. So I was like driving through.
Okay,
yeah,
Austin.
you really were the commuter.
Now, were you part of the St. Michael's is the one on Southwest Parkway?
It's off of Barton.
Oh, then never mind. It's off
Southwest Park. It is.
So it's the one that's got the incredible theater department.
It has a good theater department.
Okay, so it's not the one I'm thinking
of. Westlake is like renowned for that. We have a great theater.
No, this is a Saint something. I can't remember what it is, but I've been to some shows there. So is everybody? Well, y'all are. I'm guessing you're from Austin. I'm pointing to Kit and Imani.
Yes.
I was about to call you Amanda, and I knew that wasn't right.
Amani and Kit. Amani.
So, Chris, are you from this area?
I am 4 years an Austinite. From,
that counts.
I grew up mostly in Little Rock, Arkansas. Traveled around the Midwest doing theater, so I'm not sure where I'm from, but here I am in Austin.
So Little Rock is where I got my first dog. I drove all the way from Chicago to Little Rock to pick him up.
Wow.
There you go.
I didn't
little
know
Junior.
That.
Yeah.
Junior's from Little Rock?
Junior's from Little Rock.
Oh, wow.
We even took a trip I took him to visit his house 2 years after I had him.
Oh, my gosh.
Story.
That just made cute. My day. Do you know what?
Whole nother story. So did you do theater in Round Rock?
In
high school?
I did theater at St. Michael's. Okay. My brother peer pressured me into auditioning for the musicals because he did the spring musicals. Mm-hmm. And he was like, we're never going to school together again. And I was like, I could go to Yale. You don't know. I did not. But he just got
so
me
did
to
you
musicals.
Go to school in the days of the Greater High School Musical Theater Awards, or were you pre that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's only five years old.
Yeah. She's older.
Well, yeah.
I'm giving her a compliment.
Yeah, but I'm doing the math of the years with the moving. Yeah. That it technically just excluded it. Yeah. It had nothing to do with age.
So so did you go to college in Connecticut for theater?
I went to liberal arts school, so mm-hmm. it was a little bit more interdisciplinary, but I did study theater and psychology. I got 2 degrees.
Where did you get, and I'm going to ask this to everybody, where did that spark of love of theater come from? Where did you pick that up?
I first got it in I've like always loved musicals. Mm-hmm. My dad loved Barbra Streisand, and so I just like grew up hearing all that song, and I love that. And then what really, really made a difference for me was after my first real theater class that wasn't tech theater or acting one, but like we just read 40 different plays, and just the way that like being so immersed in plays instead of musicals was like such a change for me in the world of theater. Mm-hmm. And I think just that kind of representation that is possible and like humanity that's possible within those stories is really what made me. And then just how collaborative the art is.
Yeah.
And what about you, Chris? What brought you to theater?
My parents actually were involved with Ballet Arkansas and
BA.
I got involved in the Nutcracker 1 year. Mm-hmm. And was a toy soldier and scooting around the stage, and decided that I kind of liked doing that, but I didn't really get involved into theater until I was in high school. So, you know, that was the instrumental.
Also in Little Rock?
It was just outside of Little Rock. Mm-hmm. In Conway, Arkansas.
Oh, I know Conway. My family used to vacation there.
Oh, wow.
She's being a smarty pants. Yeah,
absolutely not.
I was like, that one was not real. Junior was.
We know at City Theater, your stage manager, do you also perform?
No, actually, I don't really like to perform. I'm mostly a director, stage manager, yep. Artistic director. Just came from, well, not just. 4 years ago, I was the artistic director of a small theater in Corinth, Mississippi. My goal is just to spread theater into small
communities. And that theater was called?
It was called Corinth Theater Arts.
Uh-huh. Did y'all have a building?
We had a building. We still have a building. There's still a building there. There's no artistic director anymore.
Uh-huh.
Just going out and reaching students and, I mean, doing summer theater camps.
So how'd you end up here?
Well, I got out of theater for a little while and moved to Austin with a job. And my family had moved to Austin before I had gotten here. And so I just wanted to be closer. But
the familia does
that
to
does
you.
The family,
I know.
How long did you spend as an artistic director?
I was 3 years at Corinth Theater Arts and 3 years in Lincoln, Nebraska with theatrics.
Was there any program or particular show that you're particularly proud of?
Oh, yes, definitely. We created some experimental projects. One was dance-based, based on Dante's Inferno. I wasn't the director, but I helped. I was the artistic director, so I approved the projects.
Yep.
And then also we did one called the Techie Ballet, where we brought the techies from backstage and made them perform on stage.
Oh, no.
And we That's used great. All the scissor lifts and the lighting, and we did everything on stage as a presentation, like a dance.
Oh, that's awesome. That's
amazing. Have you seen the preview for fantastic. That just made me think of the previews for the new Mamma Mia movie coming out? There's one preview that all the tech all the behind the scenes, the cameramen, the grips, they all come out. They're like, Mamma Mia speaks to all of us. And they all start choreographing on the set. Aww. And dancing. And I was like, you know, and it just made me think of that. I'm like, how did they get all these behind the scenes people to do a number? And it's a trailer saying, we love the movie, come see what we worked on. Awesome. And I was like, interesting.
Well, it gives us a sense of happy, you know, collaboration.
Happy crew, yeah.
So, Imani, tell me, first of all, are you, both of you, Kit and Imani, are y'all still in school?
Yes.
We know it's summer. So you are rising what?
Senior.
You're a rising senior. Kit, I'm guessing you're a rising senior, too.
Nope, I'm a rising sophomore.
Oh.
Wow.
So I'd assume since you'd been I'd assume since you'd been at Summer Youth for 3 years that you were towards the end, but you've still got three more years.
Yeah. Actually, for I started doing this in middle school, and it was the first theater opportunity I had, and my dad really wanted me to he pushed me towards it. He didn't force me into it, but he pushed me towards it and was like, this is a really good experience that you'll have in your life. And I ended up making some really good friends.
What does theater give to you as a person? Imani, I want to hear from both of you.
Imani apparently has something to say. Kit was like, yeah, you can go first.
Well, theater honestly really like changed so much about like my life. It gave me so much confidence. I used to be really quiet, and it's kind of hard for people to believe that, but it gave me so much confidence. It gave me worth. It gave me like a sense of pride. It made me feel really good. It made me escape a lot. When I'm on the stage, like, I'm a whole nother person. I'm not, you know, Imani. I'm Agnes, or I'm Maggie, or I'm the Little Mermaid that we did for our
right.
And yeah, it's just, it really has supplied me with so much, like, I can't even.
And has it, for both of you, has it energized you in terms of your schoolwork and the things that are outside of theater as well?
Yes, I think. Yeah. Yes.
And what about you, Kit? What does the theater program or theater in general give to you as a person?
I'm agreeing with Imani, honestly, uh-huh. But to put it into my own words, I really love the way that, I love the relationships that you make with the people that you meet.
Yeah.
Because the cast and all the tech people, they all just end up being this one big family, mm-hmm. And it's just, it's the most heartwarming thing. I think at the beginning of rehearsals, one time someone called me by my character name, and like, I almost welled up with tears. Imani called me Chuck for some reason, and then it was just the best for me. Mm-hmm. I really love it when people start to get into character and people start to like build their relationships, and I don't know, it's just.
So did you ever tell Dad thank you?
Yes, I have thanked him many times. My dad is a big inspiration in my life. He's like, he's a big support block.
Awesome.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. So, Imani, after your senior year, do you plan to pursue theater in college or elsewhere?
Yes, for sure, for sure.
Awesome.
I wanna major in theater and journalism. I'm a writer too, so there's that.
Awesome. Well, Teresa, you worked with this youth, and you are the director of this. Are you all? And we've learned that you are a musical performer, which we're going to talk about in a second. What about? So do you? I'm assuming you act and direct.
Nowadays, I did a couple stage readings and stuff in college, but I haven't really acted in a while. Uh-huh. I really find my love lies in directing specifically, mm-hmm. because I think it has a really great balance of like managerial skills and also creating and artistic skills, which is really fun. And just the, like I said, the collaborative part of theater and just how being the director like puts you in contact with all of the designers, like all of the artists that come together. And I think that for me is like the most exciting part. And I really love being on stage. Like, I loved being in musicals. I was in like Bye Bye Birdie, and like that kind of performing is like so fun.
Yeah.
But I think my passion really lies in directing. Yeah.
Directing. Awesome. Well, yeah. Great. And Chris, what about you? Where you're you're stage managing and directing.
Stage managing and directing. I just love finding projects to collaborate with people mm-hmm. on. Just finding those moments. So finding City Theater was really kind of, it came at the right time to work as a stage manager.
It was easy for us to find because it's right next
door. Right next door. But no, I'm looking for other projects to do, looking for other groups to get involved with, and just keep going. The creative spark that comes from it gives you a little bit of a high, and definitely miss that when you're not doing that.
So, Teresa, if you were to direct any musical, what would it be?
Man, my favorite musical that I always wanted to direct is A Chorus Line, and like realizing that is so silly.
No, because it's not.
But it's like such a
people's story.
It's so good. It's so
real.
Good.
You don't have to sell me, girl. Okay, cool. I got the first ticket right here.
Watching the like documentary Every Little Step like is amazing, and it's like funny because when I first watched that, I was like, right, like there's so many things that are just exactly how this musical have to be, so it wouldn't even be like the most like visionary thing to direct, but just like, oh my God, like that's theater for me. Is like people stories coming together. You got dance, you have music. It's just wild.
Hearts ripped open on the floor and
I'm
pure
crying,
joy at the
crying,
same time.
Yep.
Wait a second. If you listen really closely, you can hear a little bit of Chorus Line
right now.
Do y'all hear it?
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Great. Good stuff. It's good stuff. Well, thank you guys for joining us backstage. I appreciate you braving the elements and being back here with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Okay, we'll see you later.
Thanks.
Bye.
Play me the music. Give me a chance to come through. All I ever needed was the music and the mirror and the chance to dance for you.